And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into the DDC here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and The Game, Nashville app. Darren McFarland, Will Adonik, here with you. Nick Keiser for half the show in the saddle. Then Max Herz will relieve Nick for the other half. We've got a great show in store for you. SEC Media Days about to get cranked up when the commissioner will hit the podium in about 30 minutes, Greg Sankey. They're down in Atlanta this year around the College Hall of Fame. The Omni, they got their whole setup. I've never been a part of the setup in Atlanta, but only all the years in Hoover. So I'm not sure. We'll check in with Michelle Knezovic and Caroline Fitton, who are down there. They're going to be giving coverage here for the next 4 days down from SEC Media Days. And so we'll do that today. Lane Kiffin is going to talk, so we'll check in on what he's got to say. Brian Kelly, LSU, what kind of voice will he have for SEC Media Day? So lots to get into there. Teron Davenport joins us to begin the second hour. Training camp is upon us. Some teams getting ready to get cranked up right now, and the Titans rookies are about to report, and it is about on for football season. Training camp, preseason, it's all right here, just around the corner. So we'll talk to Teron at 11 o'clock. Vince Ferrara is also down at SEC Media Days. He will join us at his normal spot at high noon. So lots to get to here on the program. Really, what's up?
I believe he's still muted.
Oh. Willie says he cannot hear us.
We will get him momentarily.
Let's see. We are working. Yeah, Willie is trying to join the show. He'll join us in just a minute. So lots to get into. Major League Baseball draft last night. Actually found myself watching it because I thought it was very interesting on where Kumar Rocker would go. And sure enough, he went higher than last year. So pretty amazing to know he went 10th to the Mets. I'm sure Willie and TD will weigh in on that. They don't sign him.
I don't know why he's not.
There was a medical issue, and he goes third this year. Third to the Texas Rangers. So they take Leiter last year, Jack Leiter last year, and get Kumar Rocker this year. So pretty amazing. So amazing to see Kumar go to the Rangers. So they've got the 1-2 punch that we saw here at Vanderbilt. Now in Texas, how long will it be before we see those guys in the show? Pretty interesting stuff. Of course, we can talk with Vince about all the guys that were drafted from UT. I'm sure we'll touch on that at high noon. As he said, SEC Media Days, also a lot of Vanderbilt recruits drafted high yesterday in the first round. So what does that mean for Tim Corbin's class? So we are working behind the scenes. I'll tell you what, let's go on and do this, Nick. Let's figure out the Willie part of this thing and come back. By the way, we've got WWE SummerSlam tickets to give away. We got a lot of things going on the show today. Let's figure all the technical stuff out, and we'll come back. More DDC next. Little Rush bringing us back here on the DDC. Darren McFarland and Willie Adonik here with you. Willie, are you there? Over.
I am in. Ready to roll. I had a glitch on my end. That was my fault for the false start of the show.
The good news is you did not become false start Fred. There wasn't enough false starts, although I did go the break just so we could figure this out.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I'm thankful that false start made everybody who's had a false start feel a little bit better, because as long as you don't have five, then you still have somebody that has more than you on a given day. So it's not all bad.
We'll never forget that game. And, of course, Fred Miller will neither.
That's right.
Crazy. So I was talking about Kumar Rocker, and I've got to get your thoughts on how you have to be a bit conflicted. As a Mets fan, but as a Vanderbilt fan, right, you're, like, happy. Like, he actually improved his – he made about $500,000. Think about that. He had surgery and played in an independent league – and made $500,000. That's unbelievable, going seven spots higher. But what did you make of what the Rangers did, taking him third overall?
It shocked everybody. I was surprised. I thought he would go in the first round, but I didn't think he would go number three. Now, it does appear that even though he goes third, and even though, as you said, he's going to get more than he would have gotten last year from the Mets, he's taking below slot money. So I think that was the deal that the Rangers made. Obviously, they have done their homework on Kumar Rocker, and they believe in him, as I do. So I'm really, first and foremost, very excited for Kumar, because if there's ever a kid who got dealt a tough blow last year who didn't deserve it, it would be him. I mean, he's done everything right. As a Mets fan, I just think, as every Mets fan, you're sitting there going, okay, let's see what happens now. What in the world did the Mets see last year in the medicals that was so crazy that the Rangers either don't see or haven't seen yet? I would think that, you know, remember who's at play here? Scott Boras. Yep. Scott Boras, I'm sure, was in the middle of all of this, the pre-draft countdown. Kumar Rocker, for those that didn't follow, when he was drafted last year by the Mets, they passed on his contract because after the draft, he submitted an MRI. The Mets didn't like what they saw long-term in the MRI, and so they decided they were not going to offer him a contract. And so Kumar Rocker became an unfortunate victim because he couldn't become a free agent and sign with anybody at that time, which a lot of people think should be the rule. He had to go back into the draft this year. So for the entire last 12 months, he's been training for this. He had surgery last fall on his shoulder and then participated in an independent league and made some starts and was throwing lights out. I mean, 96, 98, he had all the velocity back that was maybe a little bit down the stretch of last season, which had everybody concerned. So here's my only question is, now what happens? Does he have to submit another MRI? Does he have to go through another physical before he actually signs a contract with the Rangers? Or have the Rangers done their homework and Scott Boras allowed them to see the medicals before the draft to say, yeah, we're okay taking him with the third pick because we've seen everything we want to see? And if they have, which if the Rangers, why wouldn't you? Then what did the Rangers not see that the Mets saw? And then 5 years from now, everybody's going to have their answer, right? Just an amazing story, especially from anybody that watched it from the Mets perspective and from the Vanderbilt baseball perspective.
Yeah, it does make you wonder, you know, if, and of course you can imagine, Mets fans and the Mets organization, they're going to be watching his career very closely, kind of like us here with A.J. Brown, right? Because a lot of people are like, oh, you know, who cares? He's in Philadelphia now. Well, it's a little bit, you know, a little bit more complex than just who cares. People are going to pay close attention. Whenever you trade away your number one receiver, people are going to compare and keep watching and see if that was a good move or a bad move. If Kumar Rocker turns out to be, you know, a freaking stud for the Rangers, you can only imagine the heat that'll come towards your team's way, right? I mean, they'll
Big
just
time.
Get crushed.
Big time. And the other thing that will happen, as we've talked about, Treylon Burks will forever be compared as they go on each week to A.J. Brown.
Yep.
Because they took the pick. And it's not Treylon Burks' fault. The same is going to be said now for the kid that they took at number 11. The compensatory pick for not signing Kumar Rocker was the 11th pick last night, a catcher from Georgia Tech. His name is escaping me right now, but he was a, you know, real decorated.
Kevin Parada, I think, was his name.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's,
remember,
the other thing
we talked about him. He was their big hitter in the region, right? Were they in the Knoxville region?
Knoxville.
Yeah,
yep.
They were in the Knoxville region.
They played against Tennessee in the regional there. So he was front and center. He was one of the best college baseball players in the country this year. What has some people a little confused, one of the top prospects in baseball is a kid named Francisco Alvarez, who's now up to AAA. He's actually younger than Kevin Paredes, right, who they just drafted, and they're both catchers. So how are they going to deal with that down the road? The Mets feel like, okay, look, I got two great players. I've got a DH to work with. If they're both great, that's a good problem to have. You could trade one of them and whatnot. But what happens with those two guys will be something to track for a long time. And, of course, the other part of it is how crazy is it that Kumar is reunited with Jack Leiter. So the Rangers end up with both of them. And how fun would that be if the Rangers have both of those guys in their starting rotation here in the coming years?
Or they end up being the 1-2 punch like they were in college? Yeah. Let's say 3 years from now, could you imagine? What if that's their ace and their two? I mean, crazy.
That's crazy what they're hoping
that
for.
Could happen. Yeah, of course. I mean,
Jack Leiter got a chance to be in the Futures game over the weekend. He only threw, I think, 9 pitches or something like that. It was only a 7-inning game, which is completely puzzling. It wasn't on TV unless you had, I don't know, Peacock or Prudential or whatever the service is that I don't get. A 7-inning game so that they could get the celebrity game to start on time in Los Angeles. That real smart by baseball there. That should put baseball on the list right there. But Leiter got in there. Leiter has really struggled at AA. He's been getting tattooed, to put it nicely here. He's had a couple of really rough outings. They shut him down for a couple weeks to sort of regroup. So he made it to the Futures game, not really because of the stats he's putting up, but his stature. But I think in the long run, he should be fine. So the only question is Kumar's arm, right? What did the Mets see?
Yep.
And Kumar would tell you, look, I've had this same arm my whole life. It's, you know, I've been able to pitch every time somebody's asked me to pitch. So isn't every pitcher's arm a time bomb? Isn't any pitcher's arm a question mark health-wise? How does anybody know, regardless of medicals, whether a guy's arm is going to hold up? That's what was puzzling to me.
Well, he did have shoulder surgery, though. I mean, he did.
He did, but I don't think that's what the Mets saw. If it was as simple as just having a surgery to correct something, I mean, there were plenty of guys last night that were picked that are undergoing Tommy, are in the process of recovering from Tommy John. So it didn't keep those guys from being signed, first-round picks. So I don't know what the Mets saw, but they were positive. They were positive that it was worth passing on Kumar Rocker. I was confused, like everybody. I'm sure Kumar was confused. And like I said, as a Mets fan, I'm very conflicted. But at least Kumar wasn't drafted by the Braves or the Yankees or somebody in the NL East. That's the one thing they have going for them. So if Kumar shines, it won't be in the National League, at least to start.
The two picks before him, gosh, they had interesting last names. I feel like there's a connection. Jackson Holiday. Yep. Oh, that's right. His father's Matt Holiday, and he was selected by the Orioles first overall. And then the D-backs with the second pick, some kid out of Georgia, last name Jones, Drew Jones. Kind of feel
D-R-U-W. Does that maybe ring a bell? I mean, there's plenty of Joneses, but not too many who spell their name, their first
Andrew,
name, Drew.
Right, Andrew, yeah. D-R-U-W. So A-N-D-R-U-W. So, yes, he, of course, is the son of Andrew Jones. He's not in the hall, right? He's a borderline guy. He's probably never going to get in. But
I think he's a really interesting debate, Andrew Jones. I think you could make a case that he's right there and that maybe he's better than some of the people in the Hall of Fame. But I agree with you. It's going to be interesting. Maybe the Veterans Committee down the road. If you look at his defensive value, which is probably underappreciated, it's hard to measure a guy's defensive value, but most people would say he's one of the best center fielders ever. Who knows? And his son, Drew, the second pick overall, he was committed to Vanderbilt. But Vanderbilt, I think, knew several months ago that don't think he's going to come to Nashville and West End. He's too good. The problem is Vanderbilt had, I think, 5 commits were drafted last night. I think a couple of them, they weren't surprised at all, were picked. A couple of them, according to the panel, you know, Kyle Peterson and Chris Burke, who are all over SEC baseball, A couple of the guys that got picked later in the first round, I think, were surprises, which means perhaps Vanderbilt thought they had a really good beat on them for coming to West End. But maybe that's in question now. Maybe there's going to be a debate of should I sign, should I not sign. The dilemma that every high school player who gets picked high has to make, right? Do I go to college for 3 years, or do I sign and go right out of high school for the money?
Yep. By the way, Spencer Jones from Vanderbilt was taken 25th overall to the Yankees.
Another guy that is a very unique player, 6'7", a left-handed version. You remember Richie Sexson, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I mean, as a Tribe fan yourself, you watched him for years. Mm-hmm. Played for the Brewers as well. Aaron Judge, who also happens to play for the Yankees. Of course, Spencer Jones picked by the Yankees. A left-handed version of Aaron Judge is, you know, kind of an unfair comparison, but there's so few guys who are 6'7" that have made it as hitters. So Richie Sexson, Aaron Judge are sort of those rare cases. But Spencer Jones is an amazing athlete. And Joe Rexroad has a really nice piece on him in The Athletic. He came to Vanderbilt to be a pitcher. And then what happens? He gets Tommy John. The pandemic happens. They have a loaded roster as he tries to become a hitter. So he has to sort of work his way into the lineup. And then, boom, it all comes together for him this year. And he hit some home runs this year that were tape measure shots that were about as far as you can hit a ball. His exit velocity is unbelievable. But a lot of people were wondering. In fact, Keith Law, who is the guy that covers, we've had him on, right, from The Athletic, who scouts and does – he didn't think Spencer Jones was a first-round pick, and the Yankees took him. So it's such an inexact science. And you mentioned Jackson Holliday and Drew Jones. Even these guys out of high school that look like they just can't miss, they're so young. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 3, 4, 5 years?
Their pedigree helps them, though.
Their pedigree helps them a lot.
Yeah, and I understand that because we've talked about it on the show, right? I remember having that conversation with Peter LaViolette at Centennial Sportsplex, right, where I talked to him about Patrick Mahomes, and, you know, this is when he was just starting out, you know, taking the NFL by storm, and I was like, how much having a father who was a professional athlete growing up in that culture helped him? And, you know, I started stating other examples, and, you know, of course, it's pretty obvious, right? Like, it's a big advantage, and these kids grew up with fathers that played, you know, at the highest level for a long time and were really, really good, and they basically grew up in clubhouses. So, you know, and, oh, by the way, having that resource at home, right? I mean, it's invaluable. So, I mean, I understand it. It doesn't guarantee that they're going to be great. It doesn't guarantee that they're going to follow in their father's footsteps and be just as good or better than them. It just means they've got an advantage. Like, you can't escape that. They have an advantage. And so I think the pedigree certainly put them up higher. But I do wonder, because everything I read on Spencer Jones, it did seem like what you said. It's like boom or bust. It's like this is either going to be a great pick or it's going to be a pick that, oh, well, we took a shot and just didn't work.
He is such a unique athlete. He can run so well for a 6'7" guy. He can cover the ground in the outfield. He's obviously got a great arm because he could have been drafted as a pitcher. So that's going to be one to watch for sure. I would have bet I would have bet a lot of money that guys like J.J. Bleda and Austin Martin, the two high first-round picks from the national championship team of 2019, I thought they would have made it by now. They're both struggling some. So a lot of struggles can happen. We just mentioned Jack Leiter is struggling some. Another guy that, last I checked, has had some ups and downs, Bryce Jarvis, you know, who we talked to the day after he got drafted. Remember the kid from Duke? He went to Brentwood Academy. His father, Kevin Jarvis, pitched in the majors for a long time. So these are the best in the world. You know, there's 750 spots, and there's probably, you know, there's 2,000 players that are vying for that are really getting into the picture whatever the number is. So you just start doing the math. It's very, very competitive to try to make it. And it's just so crazy to me, Darren, as I watch the draft, as the father of a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old, right? One that's in college, just barely in college, and one who is a rising junior. This is the kids that got drafted in the hockey draft a couple of weeks ago and the baseball draft. A lot of them are right between their ages. And I'm just thinking, my gosh, this guy could walk into my house as a buddy of one of my kids. Mm-hmm. And that would be – and I see these guys, right? I see those kids, and I'm like, man, these guys are young, right? But these guys, we're looking at, wow, you know, first-round pick and how quick he's going to make it. I mean, they're so young. It was fun to see them with their families and stuff. They're hugging their moms, and you know, they're still just babies. Yep. They're still just we're just writing the book.
Especially the ones that don't go to college. I mean,
right. Yeah. You're going right out of there. That's tough.
Like 17, 18 years old. It's like, wow.
I remember talking. We had a great conversation out of nowhere with Don Mattingly. Don Mattingly was in town. He heard the show we were on. I think it was before you joined us, Darren. This was a good while back. It might have been right when you first got to town. I want to say late 90s, before you came to the station we were on. But of course, George Plaster did the show or did the Sounds games when Don Mattingly was playing for the Sounds. So he heard George's show and he just happened to call in. And we did a sort of an impromptu interview. And I remember asking him, I said, you know, what was it like for you going out of high school? Was that scary? You know, knowing that, you know, if you go to college, you have more of a contained atmosphere. You're on a campus. You're with other peers. You can develop that way. He goes, I didn't want to do that at all. He said, I absolutely loved the fact that baseball was my job at 18. So for some kids, it's the right move. But it is, you know, it's a daunting thing. You're going to go to some really crummy ballparks. You're not going to get paid a whole lot. You're starting at the bottom. There's not a lot of media coverage. There's actually virtually no media coverage in the low minors. There's people keeping tabs on you, but it is not very glamorous. And you know, college baseball is different now. College baseball, all the games are streamed. You know, there's coverage of it. You know, you got fans at a lot of places at the top level where these kids could go, and you're turning that down to you know, start from the bottom. But it is your job. You're a professional. You're getting paid, and hopefully you move up and get good at your craft. But it's two very different paths.
Vince Ferraro will join us at high noon. He's down in Atlanta at SEC Media Days. Drew Gilbert went in the first round, 28th pick to the Astros. So right after Spencer Jones, a couple picks after Spencer Jones went to the Yankees, Drew Gilbert goes to the Astros. One of the compensatory picks also had Jordan Beck going to the Rockies, which will be interesting. You know, we know Tennessee could hit home runs for sure, and so we'll see how that pick plays out. That was pick 38 to the Rockies. We'll come back, try to check in and hear a little bit of what Commissioner Greg Sankey has to say down in Atlanta at SEC Media Days. Of course, that is the official start to SEC Media Days. When the commissioner takes the podium, then you know they are underway for the next 4 days. We'll try to do that on the other side here on the DDC, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Back here on the DDC on this Monday, Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. So far, the commissioner has not taken to the podium. Their big room, Willie, looks a little bit smaller than the big room in Hoover. I could be wrong, but it looks considerably smaller than the big room. So I wonder where they're putting everybody, where they're stacking everybody up, because we know they never turn down credentials. Probably have over 1,000 media members there. So we'll try to check in when Greg Sankey hits the podium. So while we're in a little bit of a stall, let's talk a little bit about what you did on Friday with Mace. Sure enough, as soon as I say that, looks like
the commish is ready.
Not yet.
Is he shuffling? Is he adjusting?
Yeah,
the mic?
It looks like
his way.
Looks like he may be.
Is somebody introducing the commissioner?
I don't know. They just broke away, so I thought he was about to pop out of the curtain and go surprise, but it was not him. Lots of beans commercials. A lot of Bush's beans. here on the SEC
What is going on with the Beans?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But you and Mace got a chance to call the Prospect Showcase game on Friday at Fordyce Center, Bellevue. Obviously, crowded house, looked great, sounded great. Askarov looked also the part too, didn't he?
He did. You know, this is another thing along the lines of what we've been talking about. These kids are so young, but there's some talent there. It's just, it's going to take some smoothing out. The people I talked to, Askarov, what a great first impression. You saw the athleticism. He made a couple of really good saves. His team played really well in the half that he was in. There were two halves, and each team had two goalies. So he played the second half. His team was behind when he went in there, but they played outstanding. Luke Evangelista was on his team, and he played a great second half. He was very, very good. That's another guy to keep your eye on long term. He's still awfully young, but Askarov made some really good saves. He also flashed a couple of moves. He made the great poke check on the penalty shot, which I don't think I've ever seen a goalie come that far out to make a it was a full-on dive, you know, like a desperation, and he got it. And then he made a stick-handling move away from the net. I mean, way out of the net. So his confidence, his swagger, his charisma, his athleticism was full display. But now it's just going to be a process of smoothing it out, the technical refinement that you have to have, the mental toughness that you have to have. It was funny to talk to some of the guys. We talked to Sebastian Borlo after the game was over, talked to a couple of the scouts, and they all kind of say the same thing. They were like, he's going to knock your socks off with the talent. But there are some of the things he did right there that you probably wouldn't advise doing in an NHL game, you know? So can he refine that? You know, can he use that athleticism but channel it in the right way? You know, he's had some excellent coaching, but I think what they're hoping for is with consistent coaching from the top down in the organization, now that he's here, they can really work with him on getting him ready. And there's no rush. You've got one of the best in the world already right now, and the only question is going to be, you know, how much seasoning is he going to need? Andre Vasilevsky, not to try to compare him, but Vasilevsky and Saros were among the goalies that were young, were probably ready to go out and win an NHL game at a super young age, 21, 22 years old, and did. But to their credit, the Predators and the Lightning sort of held them back, right? There was Ben Bishop in Tampa. There's Pekka Rinne in Nashville. And that allowed them to bring them along slow, not rush them and ask too much of them before they could fully develop. And I think you're seeing the fruits of that right now.
Igor Afanasyev, he didn't play, did he?
Or he didn't play. It was the day after we talked to him.
Yeah, which we had a great conversation with.
I think if I heard this right, I don't want to get it wrong, but I think it was a slight hip injury. Okay. It was nothing serious. It just they didn't want to do anything to make it worse. But they thought he had a really good week leading up to that. I would have really enjoyed watching, especially after we got a chance to talk to him. He was his team. I think he was on the winning team, but he didn't play. So that shows you how well his teammates picked him up there. But we got to see, other than him and Fedor Svechkov, who is still under contract with the KHL, and that's a whole other thing, right? You have to wait it out, see how that goes for the next year. There's so much, you know, up. Question mark. Hopefully they can keep good tabs on him, reach out to him, stay in touch, and say, you know, we want you we down the road, but have a good season, and then we'll figure this out. But those two were the only ones that really didn't get to be on display there. They were really excited about the number of guys they got there, the number of picks that they just made, and the other top prospects that were there to be showcased.
How did Kimmel look?
I thought, yeah, here's the thing that happened to Kimmel. He got there, then his equipment didn't arrive. So he had no skates, no pads, no sticks, nothing. So imagine like showing up to a baseball game. You know, you might be able to relate to this, or maybe more of our listeners could, and you don't have your glove. You don't have your spikes. You don't have your, you know, your regular stuff. So you get a brand new glove, you get brand new spike. I mean, that can't be easy, especially your stick, you know, or like imagine showing up at a, you know, pretty important tennis tournament. You don't have your racket. Somebody just hands you a racket. So I'm sure the equipment guys got him some really nice stuff, but just when you've never had that, what everybody was telling me, like you, it could not have been easy for him, but yet he still flashed. I thought he made an incredible move in the first half shootout and scored the goal, which is one of the reasons that Askarov saw that and took that move away from him and made that diving poke check in the second half. But he made a great skilled move. He's younger than a lot of the prospects that were there. There were some kids 21, 22 years of age, 3-4 years older than Kemmel. But he still, I thought, showed some good talent. You could see him. He wasn't shy, and he was in the middle of the action there. He was skating with some good players. The guy everybody's talking about, Darren, is Juuso Parsonen, seventh-round pick, who I think had an injury the year he was drafted. Like, everybody's got a story, right? So he fell all the way to the seventh round. But once he got healthy, he started coming on. He got to Milwaukee last year, and there are some people that think he is very close to being NHL ready, that he could play some Predator games this year.
And he's a bigger kid, too, right?
Bigger.
He's a bigger guy.
And you can tell he was more mature. He was on the same line with Kemmel. And I think that helped Kemmel be able to do some things out there. But Parsonen was the guy that looked like the man amongst boys in a lot of ways.
That'll be a guy
to watch in training camp.
Yeah. Another Finn.
There's plenty of them.
Interesting.
Not just goalies. I know everybody says, hey, wait, man, they love these Finnish goalies. They got a lot of Finns up and down. First round draft pick. They got Parsonen. They got Mikael Granlund, who was at the wedding, right? Did you see the wedding photo? Philip Forsberg's crew. I saw Pekka there. Granlund was there. Ekholm looked like he had the tux on, so he must have been one of the groomsmen there. So it was quite the crew. Jussi Saros was there. Flashed in the stash.
Interesting.
So I guess the big day was over the weekend.
Yeah. Well, we knew he just had his bachelor party. That's typically how it works.
Looks like everything went right on schedule.
So a lot of people are wondering. So I went on Robbie and Rex Road at 9 o'clock. The whole JT Miller thing, it kind of feels like that. I said it kind of feels like that's dead. Do you feel the same way?
You know, I kept floating that around. You know, you had a lot of people there, a lot of hockey people, a lot of fans, and they're all asking me, and I'm – so I don't know. Because they've been listening to our show, right? They're dying to know what's the move going to be to try to get that one guy that we all think would be a good fit, an upgrade to that second line. And in the meantime, they're signing this guy and that guy. After the game was over, you guys did the afternoon show, and we hear about Zach Sanford. You know, these are all pieces, guys.
That's probably fourth line, right?
Yeah, I mean, Zach Sanford at one point, remember the 2013 draft? That was the Seth Jones draft. That was a very deep draft. That was McKinnon. That was Barkov, Jones, Nichushkin, on down the road. A ton of deep, deep talent. Sanford was a second-round pick. So at one point, he was considered, you know, a guy that could develop into a top-six guy. He has not been that. He did have a nice year for the Blues a couple of years ago. He had 16 goals, 14 assists, I think. And so not 5 years ago, 6 years ago, but it was like 3 years ago. And he did play for them some when they won the cup. So he's a serviceable guy, but he would be a big stretch for a second line. So right now, if this is it, you're saying that, okay, Tomasino hopefully is ready for a second line. Maybe Eli Tolvanen. But now you've got two question marks, right? I was hoping that at some point, and maybe it could still happen, right? You've got a long time before the season starts, but you were hoping that you have a guy that can solidify the second line. So then you've got one spot to have a tryout, basically. But now, right now, you got Sanford, Cody Glass, Tolvanen, Tomasino, everybody else that they signed, this Sherwood, Kiefer Sherwood, who lights it up at the AHL. There's always that guy. Sherwood would be the Daniel Carr kind of guy. right? A dominant player in the AHL. But is he a real deal? Because if he's, you know, he's cheap, might be great, but you're asking a lot. So are you hoping that one of those guys sticks? I don't know. I'd still like to have something a little more firm and established for that spot. They've still got some cap money to play with there, but the JT Miller thing, to answer your question, when I was floating it around, it doesn't seem like there's anything there.
Yeah, it doesn't feel.
Even though I feel like Elliot likes the fit, I like the fit. I think you like the fit, but it doesn't look like it's going that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like he would be the guy.
It also doesn't look like Greg Sankey's taking the podium anytime soon. So we'll just
what's he
just
doing?
Continue.
What's the deal?
I don't know what's going on.
It says on they send out the itinerary.
I know. It says 10:30. 10:30 our time.
Come on, Greg.
I don't know what's going on. So a little bit of a delay. But we'll continue the discussion on the other side because we need to talk about Lankinen. We need to talk about they haven't addressed that void that we've been discussing. Are they done? Is this what they could roll with? We'll do all that to close out hour number one here on the DDC. That's next. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. I got to be honest, when you threw that out there, I was thrown off because I don't believe it was Forsberg. Because I'll tell you the two sets of weddings that I saw this weekend. One, I saw where Callie Yarncroke got married, and I saw Victor Arvidsson was at his wedding. So I saw Callie get married over the weekend. Yarncroke, who just signed a 4-year deal, by the way, in Toronto. I guess he's got to sign the same contracts as he's always signed his entire career. I guess it was 2.1 instead of just 2 million. But I think it was Ekholm's wedding is also the one that I saw. So I saw two weddings this weekend, and I was a little thrown off because you said Forsberg. I believe it was Ekholm's wedding because I did see UC and Pekka and Granlund, and Forsberg. So I think it was Mattias Ekholm's wedding that I saw. I don't think it was Forsberg's.
This past weekend?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Ekholm was getting married too?
Yep. I see Granlund, Forsberg, Pekka, UC, and looks like Tolvanen.
Yeah, I saw that picture. I just assumed that was Phillips' wedding
because
all the hoops. Wait a minute. I felt like I should have known that if Ekholm was getting married at the same
time. They got married in Sweden, and I saw where Callie got married in Sweden this weekend too. So
did the three buddies coordinate the weddings at the same? Those three are very tight, right? Yarncroke,
yes.
Forsberg, and Ekholm.
Mm-hmm.
Did they coordinate this and have like back to back to back? Is that what's happening?
I don't think so because I only saw Victor Arvidsson in Callie's. So that's why you threw me off when you said Forsberg because I was like,
wait a minute,
I saw two weddings
I
and I was like, did Forsberg get married too? I was like, wait a minute. I saw Callie Yarncroke. I saw Mattias Ekholm. I didn't see Forsberg. So I don't think it was Forsberg. I'm almost positive the picture you were talking about is 100% Mattias Ekholm's wedding.
Okay.
So I just wanted to pass that along. By the way, let's go down because we can now check in. We'll hear a little bit of what Commissioner Greg Sankey is currently talking about.
Mercedes-Benz Stadium, as you look to the end of the season or towards the end of the season, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl will host one of the college football playoff semifinals on December 31st. Looking back, when we wrapped up in Indianapolis, Georgia's football team won the third consecutive national championship in football by an SEC team, and just because it's fun to remember, LSU in 2019, Alabama in 2020, and Georgia in 2021, or at least those seasons. I thought that was great. That would be my talking point about how excited we are about the quality of competition. And then I was reminded that members of this conference from 2007 to 2010 had four different teams win four consecutive national championships, LSU, Florida, Alabama, and Auburn. And if you look at the BCS CFP era and you add in Tennessee in 1998, we've had six different football programs earn national championships, which communicates the depth of our conference competitively. And I'll let you make the comparisons between us and our colleagues as it relates to national championship success in football. But as we watch the college football world change around us, we are absolutely proud of the competitive team and individual achievements earned through the Southeastern Conference, be that on the football field, the women's basketball court, baseball field. The World Championships in track and field showcase young people who've had an experience in this conference and every other one of our 21 championship sports. The reality, though, is that away from the games and the playing fields and the courts and the tracks and the courses, it's been quite a summer, actually quite a year for those of us who write about, those of you who write about, and those of us who work in college athletics. Go back to June of 2021. We had a Supreme Court decision in Alston versus the NCAA. The onset of name, image, and likeness really took place on July 1st through the onset of different state laws and an alteration of potential plans for NCAA governance in the aftermath of the Alston decision. Later in July, we, as a conference, issued membership invitations to the University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas to join the Southeastern Conference effective July 1st, 2025. We saw creation of the NCAA's Constitution Committee. We watched more membership transition among conferences in Division I. The NCAA Transformation Committee was announced in December. We had another uptick in COVID, which introduced disruption and felt eerily similar to what we experienced through the 2021 year. We had, as you know, consideration of expansion to the college football playoff format that ultimately was not adopted under the current CFP governance structure. This spring, the NCAA announced the transition of its president, NCAA President Mark Emmert, and the commencement of a search to fill that role. And then on June 30, right after I got to my lake to relax, the announcement came that the Big Ten would expand its membership to include USC and UCLA, which created a busy few weeks for you and for me as we tried to separate truth from fiction. You tried to figure out what your competitors knew or didn't know and what they were reporting. Tried to figure out the different agendas, and you worked to post stories quickly. So much for our summer vacation. So that brings us here to begin the talking season ahead of college football. And in preparation for my comments, I went back to my first Media Days remarks in 2015. I'd been to any number of those as a member of the SEC staff, but I started reading through each year's comments. And in 2015, again here in 2018, and a couple times since, I began not with Mr. Spicoli's quote, but with a reference to Bob Dylan's "The Times They Are A-Changing." And I've never lost sight of that reality. I'm not sure we all understand what is intended by those lyrics or conveyed by the phrases that the wheel's still in spin, but times are changing more rapidly than ever. And you saw some of that play out this spring. So at our Destin meetings, we started with a small meeting of our head football coaches. And I went in with a very clear focus on a message, probably not the message that you thought I would communicate, maybe not the message they thought they'd hear, but one that was clear and direct. And as I walked into the room, I learned that someone had tweeted our head football coach seating chart. And the trending topic on Twitter became not the Destin spring meetings, but look at this football coach's seating chart. But as we refocused, here's what I told our coaches. It is never going to be the same, but it doesn't have to be the way that it is. We're dealing with complex problems that won't be solved by complaints, by accusations, by finger pointing, or by offering simple solutions. What is needed now is collaboration, deep thinking about real world solutions, and everyone participating in the conversation. The outcome, and I shared this in real time, was we had some of the most in-depth conversations with full participation through our spring meetings that I've ever experienced. And that includes not only our football coaches, but our women's basketball coaches, men's basketball coaches, our student athlete leadership council representatives, our athletics directors, faculty representatives, senior women administrators, and ultimately our presidents and chancellors that week. Each group recognizes that it's never going to be the way that it was, but it doesn't have to be the way that it is.
Okay, there you go. There's some of Commissioner Greg Sankey. We'll continue recording that because, as you can tell, he's starting to get into some of the meat and potatoes that we want to hear, but we'll have to hear it in the second hour. We will come back and start with Teron Davenport, though. We're going to talk some Titans. Training camp is just around the corner, and we will do that next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville app.